of Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, Bankstown? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, part-time Brendan behind the glass. It is a Thursday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brendan is only going to work like half the days in December. So very part-time, Brendan.
So he's actually going all out. He may be a little drained after that.
I think that's true, actually.
That's a heavy month
for
him.
You misunderstood what I was telling you earlier, I think.
You said you're going to take off the week, Christmas, and the week before Christmas.
Well, I'm taking off the week between Christmas and New Year's, which you are too, Jeremy.
Okay. I might too.
Yeah, but I thought you had something else.
Yeah, I am traveling the weekend.
Because I don't want to live without you guys.
I am traveling the weekend before Christmas. But I will be here for every day. I'm not taking
really?
Any days off. Yes.
Oh, okay. So semi-part-time, Brendan, then. Not full-part-time,
I don't
Brendan. That's
think,
good.
I
That's
think
good.
You and I are missing the exact same amount of days, is my belief in December.
Yeah, but I'm talent. Let's face it. Blankers had a softball game yesterday. A ring was on the line. Championship softball game. So much on the line. The stakes were through the roof. How did it go, Blankers?
Branham, it didn't go well.
What?
And I'm probably going to set myself up for some abuse here.
I can't wait for this.
But you're going to love this. So, championship game, and we show up to the field.
This is the first time that I'm hearing this story.
Yes, it
way.
Is. And I was a little apprehensive to tell it because there's part of me that says I shouldn't even put myself out there like this. But anyway, our coach tells us before the game that a guy that's like the assistant commissioner of the league, whose daughter's on the other team, is not supposed to be allowed to coach. He coaches the 10 and under all-stars and all these other things. And he wasn't supposed to coach the team, but he's coaching the other team that we're playing against. And she also indicates that the rules in the league when they put the league together every year is you're not allowed to stack the team. However, I find out that every coach's kid, including his, is on that team.
Is it not a draft?
They're supposed to be a draft, but then they're allowed to play certain players on teams. So she's already basically kind of told me that they're stacking. We're playing a stacked team tonight. So then the coach for the night of the other team, that's this assistant commissioner, comes.
Is it like, what does the coach of the night mean? Is that like a lady of the night?
No,
what does that mean?
He hasn't coached them all year, but because it's the championship game, he's going to coach them tonight.
I gotcha.
And so he walks into our dugout, and I'm literally helping Taylor get her cleats on and stuff. And the commissioner of the whole league comes over and says, hey, do you have the rings for the team that wins tonight and the runner-ups? And he says, yeah, I do. And she goes, well, make sure that our coach gets their rings. And he goes, oh, yeah, I'll bring the runner-up rings to you guys in a minute.
It.
And
I
look at him
it.
And I go, oh, really?
This is Larry Bird saying, which of you guys is finishing in second place today when he walks in the locker room?
So he looks at me and then he goes, oh, I was just kidding. And I go, mm-hmm. So, okay, fast forward, game starts, and it's coach pitch, and a buddy, you know.
Are you on the bump?
I am catching for our other assistant coach, who happens to play minor league baseball.
All right, so you're his Martin Maldonado.
We joked about that last night, because I'm like his personal catcher, but we keep it moving, and, you know, again, we've been just about, hey, the girls just need to have fun, and we try to give them pitches they can hit, obviously, and do things like that. But right away in the first inning, the coach of the other team starts telling our runners they need to go back to different bases, starts telling the umpire, you need to call her out. You know, she didn't do this. And we're looking at each other as coaches going, is this guy really doing this? And the umpire's been pretty cool, but he's like, these guys are a little bit intense. They're a little bit over the top. I go, yeah, but they can't keep telling you what calls to make. And I think we all know that, you know, when this is like 7 and under softball, the girls don't understand get it to the pitcher. They can't throw it and catch it every time, right? Mm-hmm. So there's an understanding if the ball kind of bounces around in the infield, don't go trying to take an extra base, right? And there's a line literally like a halfway point.
Yeah.
If you're in front of the line when the ball gets into the infield, you score. If not, you go back. Well, this guy's going, our runners were past the line, and he's telling the umpire to send them back, and the umpire's sending them back. We're not saying anything. We're like, let's look. It's just for fun. It's fine. So
I don't know if I'm buying the it's for fun thing.
It's irritating to us, but we're not going to make it a deal, right? And he's kind of making a scene of himself multiple times. Well, about the third inning, he's coaching third base for his team, and the same thing happens. They have runners at first and second, and the ball kind of gets kicked around behind the pitcher's mound. He tells both of his runners to run, and then while the girls are trying to put the ball in the pitcher's hand, he grabs the kid by the back of the jersey and shoves her towards home, going, go home, go home, go home. At which point I had had enough. So I stood up. I was standing by the dugout, the edge, the opening of the dugout, and I came out. I said, no, timeout, Blue. No way he's going to let her score. And he goes, like, you know, you're right. Make her go back. I go, and the runner at first that went.
She should have been out because you can't, you know, help a runner.
You're also right because at one point he had two runners cross each other trying to do that, and we let that go too.
Huh.
But I said both runners have to go back. The umpire said both runners have to go back. And he looks at me and he goes, and I go, why don't you let the kids play the game and determine who wins and stay out of it? And he goes, why don't you shut up? And I went, okay, now all bets are off. So now I'm walking towards him. And I'm like, are you seriously coming at me right now with this? Because you've done this all night long. You've altered the umpires. You've tried to get extra runs. You stacked your team. When is enough enough? And he goes, hey, man, go back in your dugout. And I was like, okay, no way. So at this point, my assistant coach comes at him and says, bro, we've let a lot slide. You need to take it down a notch. And our assistant coach tries to, like, pat him on the shoulder. He slaps his hand away. And at that point, our assistant coach goes, you don't want both of us. I'm just letting you know. You don't want one of us. So we went back to the dugout. I'm staring at him now. I am not going to stop staring at him. And he goes, what are you staring at? And I go, well, you wake up every morning and look in the mirror. If you haven't figured it out yet, don't ask me. Because I said, I got answers you don't want to hear. And he's like, you want to go, bro? And I was like, so time out. You're on the board. You're the deputy commissioner. You're a coach. And you want to fight on the diamond? And you want to get yourself embarrassed in front of your kids? I was like, you got problems, man. And so we just played the rest of the game. And we ended up losing. And we were cool about it. And Taylor's old coach is an assistant coach for the team. And I walked up to her, and I also walked up to every coach on our team, and I said, if I embarrassed us at all tonight, or I was out of line, please tell me. And they were like, no, we heard the whole thing. You were fine. Even the coach on the other team said, yeah, he shouldn't have been doing that, and we're with you. I was like, okay, cool. Well, they do pictures on the field. Lisa comes out and goes, did you really do that? I go, you don't even know what happened. She goes, that was embarrassing. And I'm like, now I'm boiling all over again. So God love my child. We get home and Taylor is crying. And Taylor's crying because we lost. And she wants a rematch. And she's like, and they cheated. They kept stealing extra bases. And then that coach told Daddy to shut up. And that's when Daddy got mad. And when Daddy's mad, I'm mad too. And I go, did you hear that?
It's a shame she's always so mad.
Taylor?
Yeah.
She's just a competitor. Like our assistant coach. Like, he loves that. He goes, my kid was happy with the second place ring. He goes, your kid cried? I love that. Your kid wants to win. I was like, well, I mean, she just likes to play. But I was like, I was so mad about the fact that, you know, I literally walked right by their dugout on the way out going, I just want to see if he's going to say anything else. But I was like, at this point in their lives, we wanted the girls to have fun. There were several missed calls that we weren't going to. And the umpire goes, you know, you could challenge that. And I could go. And I go,
challenge?
Yeah, he goes, you can appeal it. And there was a girl that missed home plate. And we're like, no, it's not that big of a deal. And yet on the other team, they were just constantly like, and I was like, at one point I go, you're going to get a ring sized for you too. So don't even worry about it. But I was boiling. Like at a certain point, I felt my blood pressure to the point where if I don't walk away right now, like I'm going to be that guy and I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. I mean, there was a ring on the line. There was a championship on the line. I mean, they're not playing for second place here. Like, if you're playing in these leagues, you're playing for titles. You're playing for championships.
7 years old?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you start early, right?
So you're the guy
breed
that,
a winner.
You're
you
telling
start
your
early.
Girls to take that extra base and do those little things?
You play through the echo of the whistle. That's all I'm saying. You play through the echo of the whistle. Like, what's the punishment here? You went a little bit too far. They moved you back to where you were anyways.
I got home. I called our coach to make sure because she's like, you're going to get me off the board. You're going to get me. I'm going to lose my. And I'm like, if anybody asks, I'll take full blame for this. And she was like, no, you were fine. I was like, okay.
Wait, I thought you were the coach.
Well, we were assistant.
He was an
coach.
Assistant.
We're both
yeah.
assistant
oh,
coaches.
He was helping out. He was like an assistant. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I actually called one of my buddies that has kids that also played college. I go, was I wrong for this? And he goes, the optics of it says that Lisa. I understand where Lisa's coming from, but he goes, the ex-athlete and the man says, anybody that tells another man to shut up, all bets are off, and you did exactly what you were supposed to do. And I was like, okay, cool. As long as you're good with it, then I'm good with it too, but I understand it. And it took till this morning, And Lisa was on the treadmill, and I got done dropping the girls off at school, and she calls down, and she goes, hey, I just want you to know, I'm sorry, and I have your back. I just was worried. I don't want you to get shot. I go, this isn't road rage. This is a softball game. He's not.
Well, I mean.
I mean, don't go Akeem Tlaib on me, exactly. But I understand that.
You get a Tlaib there, you might not have made it to today's show.
Yeah, I was, but I was pretty worked up last night.
Alex on Twitch says Joel Espada instead of Joe Espada.
Yeah.
Was Blankers in the wrong? Was he in the right here? I think that I need a few minutes to digest it all
and
come up with my own opinion. But did Joe go too far here? Did Joel go too far? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, was Blankers in the wrong here? 713-780-ESPN. Also, what are some of the stories that you've had like this? 713-780-3776.
It seems to happen more frequently.
I used to umpire Little League when I was in my younger days. Yeah, oh yeah. Okay. Select ball, high school, all that. And this happened all the time. Like, this happened all the time. Like,
I kind of get it with high school, though.
It was actually more in club ball. Like, in high school ball, they have coaches, they have people that they have to answer to. Like assistant coaches aren't really going to argue with you because if they get ejected, they got to go meet like with the UIL.
In general, though,
oh really?
Like,
oh yeah.
I didn't realize high
school
to that level.
High school is nothing. Select ball, where every single daddy thinks that they're Sparky Anderson and Tommy Lasorda.
Well, just
that's where you get your altercation.
I just mean older ages. I can't imagine getting like super into a 7-year-old softball game.
Oh, maybe it's worse. It's not worse at a younger age.
Well,
it's worse at a younger age.
I may or may not have dropped at one point that there is living proof that those who can't play coach, because I think that some people that can't play live vicariously through their kids, and then they take. And then if this guy is also like coaching the 10 and under teams and the 10 and under all-star teams and then wanting to coach just his girl for the championship game, I think he takes it a little too serious.
You think he was jealous that he couldn't play in the 7-year-old softball championship?
He might have wanted to put a glove and a mask on and go play third base. I don't know. But, like, I've said this story before, but a certain general manager that's no longer a general manager in this town that thought he was very smart and also was way over the top intense about his teams was banned from his kids' games because when his kids played basketball, he would berate the officials up and down the floor to where they had to literally make a league-wide rule that said, you're not allowed in the bleachers, you can watch from the glass of the door, but if you cause any more disturbances, your child won't be allowed to play anymore.
Yeah.
That's how serious certain professional general managers are about their kids' games.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Blankers in the wrong here. What stories like this do you have? Let's go out to the HRMP listener line for Troy. Troy, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Troy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, Joe, absolutely did you not take it too far. You kind of stole my thunder. Jerks and coaches like that live vicariously through them kids because they sucked at sports. And they were on losing teams growing up. I coached my kids all through the years, and it's ridiculous what it comes to at a 7-year-old softball game nowadays. I go, my nephews play select ball, and I go watch some of these coaches, and it's embarrassing how these guys act nowadays. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Troy.
Appreciate the call, Troy. He's right. I mean, it is embarrassing. Like, seeing this stuff, it is really embarrassing. You have grown men who are coaching their children. Whether it's on the softball field, whether it's on the baseball field, from ages 6 to 14, and they literally think every single game is Game 7 of the World Series, and they think that there's college coaches watching their kids in every single second that they play with a scholarship on the line. They think that those are the stakes every single time, so they hate everything that goes against their children. And honestly, it's really bad. It's like it's become an issue, I think.
I had a coach get thrown out of one of my rec league games in probably middle school, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also had a parent get thrown out of a game when I was playing for the middle school team.
Yeah.
I don't remember the details, but the parent getting thrown out was hilarious.
I've thrown out about 100 people Like,
have
with,
you?
Oh,
really?
Absolutely. I had a quick trigger. When it came to select ball, I'm not listening to little Sparky Anderson daddies of 8-year-old Coach Ball yelling about, does that pitch catch the zone when it's 3 feet off the outside corner? Absolutely. I had the quickest trigger you will ever see.
Now, if you're
hundreds.
At, you're like, at say, like a public park.
Uh-huh.
And you toss someone, what's the rule? They had to go to the car, or they got to go away from the field? Or
you have to out of sight, out of...
Earshot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Out of sight. You can't see him, you can't hear him, basically.
Okay.
So, like, they have to leave. And I there was times where I would throw out a dude in the first game of a doubleheader. He'd come back the second time and be like, yeah, you were right, you got me. Like, most of the time it wasn't an issue. Most of the time they were just trying to get thrown out, but they take it way too seriously. As far as, like, your situation, I don't... Yeah. I mean, you kind of got baited, I think. I think you kind of got baited by that dude more than anything else. I don't think you were necessarily out of line.
I mean, and I even talked to the umpire after the game, and I was like, hey, man, great job. And you know, he laughed. He's like, hey, I appreciate the fact that you guys, you know, were just out there to have fun. I was like, you know what? At a certain point, maybe I'll be more intense about wins and losses as she gets older. But in a 7-and-under game where you're lucky to get 6 outs in the game because there's run rules. And, like, if a team scores 5 runs, the inning's over. And so... We were down by 1, 5-4 after 1. We were down by 1, 10-9 after 2. And then we lost by 1 after 3. So it was like they scored 5 in every inning. And by the way, the reason why I was even less concerned, the last play of the game, they have bases loaded and 1 out. And Taylor's playing pitcher because they like the fact that she can field, and then she just runs and touches home plate. We get the force out. So we already got 1 of those. And my buddy's dad, he's an ex-umpire and coach, he's in the dugout helping us too. And he goes, hey, if Taylor gets 2 more of those, we could win this game. I was like, it's set up perfectly. This is strategy in 6-and-under softball. Load the bases so you can get outs. And the girl for the other team hit a ball that got to the outfield. Our entire team started a rugby scrum fighting for who could get the ball into the infield. By the time she touched every base and everybody else had touched every base and scored, they were still fighting over the ball. And I go, and that's why you don't care about who won the game.
Yeah. See, I'm okay with caring about winning, but it shouldn't trump developing the players. Like the life lessons, them getting
I
better.
I just want her to love the game.
Should take priority more than, like, okay, I'm going to win this game. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Frank, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Frank?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Everyday listener. Hey, man, look, show's great. But I want to touch on this. I've been coaching my kid. He's going into high school now, coaching him since he was 3. I got another one coming through. I'll be honest. I'm not as intense with the little one as I was with the older one. I was a college athlete. I went through it with my dad, my grandpa. I can still remember both of them getting kicked out of my all-star game for talking trash to the umps. But I will say this. A lot of these umpires nowadays are younger guys.
Yeah.
I remember growing up, they were older guys, and you could have a conversation with them. This summer, my son was playing All-Stars. He's 14 years old. He got thrown out of the All-Star game for saying, get his ass in a rundown. Excuse my language. But that's what he said. And the umpire threw him out the game. I thought it was a little bit ludicrous. I was like, you know, we worked all year to get to All-Stars, and you just threw him out the game because in the heat of the game, he said, get his ass. He wasn't a derogatory comment or anything like that. So, yeah, somebody coaches do get out of hand, but a lot of times these umpires get in there because they never played any ball. Now they're making $40 a game, and guess what? They got all the power. I mean, it just didn't help that guy was a nerd, but I just thought I'd throw that scenario out there, too.
So. I'm usually, Frank, appreciate the call. I usually advocate for the umpire, especially when it comes to non-important select ball or anything sub-varsity.
Right.
But the quality of umpire isn't great. You're right. But I think that you kind of, like, have to be the better person there. Now, if you get your son thrown out, like, all bets are off. I get your point once your kid gets thrown out. But you do have to understand the quality of the umpire is not going to be good for select ball, sub-varsity, even varsity.
If I got thrown out of a game at 14 years old, I couldn't recover. It would be devastating.
The most I ever got was a technical playing basketball. I never got thrown out of a game. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Let's go back out to the HRP listener line. ABC Eric, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, ABC Eric?
Joel, Jeremy, what's going on, guys?
What's up, man?
Hey, so I got a story. So about 16 years ago, I was playing for Langham Creek, playing soccer varsity senior year. Last district game of the year, we were playing that little scrubby school up there off of 290, whose colors are green and white. I won't mention them by name. But they had this kid on their team who they just thought was a god, used to wear gold cleats. And, you know, the thing about soccer, if you wear gold cleats, you better be freaking Ronaldo, you know what I mean? And his daddy was the coach. And it came down to the between us and them for the playoff spot. So a kid on my team gets the ball. He's running down the sideline. He's about to be one-on-one with the goalie. What does the coach do? Stick his dang foot out and trip him.
A little Woody Hayes.
Oh, no.
Ref doesn't say anything. Where's my coach going ham? He gets sent to the parking lot. It's just we end up fighting on the field. We end up getting a couple of red cards. We lost the game. They went to the playoffs and went far. And it was the worst feeling. And then I went away to college, played soccer, and then I felt like that was just the end of my soccer career, because when I went to college, the team school I played for, we got waxed all 3 years. So.
Thanks for the call, ABC, Eric. I'm surprised we're not seeing you in the World Cup currently. But thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees. 713-780-ESPN. Was Blankers out of line here? Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chris, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Chris?
Hey, what's up, guys? Joel, man, thank you for sharing that story with us. I was just cracking up the whole time. I mean, does this guy not know who Joel Blank is?
Stop it.
I mean... You let a lot of stuff go, Joel, so no, you weren't in the wrong, you know, but enough is enough, and a bully only stops when he gets hit in the mouth, and that's what you're, you know, teaching your daughter and their team a life lesson, like, hey, when you're right, you gotta stand up for yourself, and I'm gonna stand up for my daughter, and when you have kids of your own, I expect you to stand up for your daughter. So, Joel, you are not in the wrong at all, and that's why we love you guys, because you kind of share your personal stories with us, and that was great, Joel.
Thanks,
Chris. Appreciate the call, Chris. So did he know who you were? Did he know who Joel Blank was?
I will pay Joel to break out next year, and when she's an 8-year-old softball, to break out a "Do you know who I am?" to an umpire.
No chance.
I will pay you to
absolutely
do that.
No chance.
No, you should. You don't have to do it to the umpire, but you should do it to the coach that's challenging you. The coach that's questioning your manhood.
Somebody.
Your manhood was at stake here, and you didn't let him know that you were freaking Joel Blank.
No. He should pull it out to an 8-year-old.
No, not even that.
As she's coming to the plate, and he's doing the catching. He's the battery made of some minor leaguer.
I told you guys in the break, but then Lisa's like, wait a minute, and he was on the board. Is this going to prevent Taylor from moving up and getting treated properly in the next league? I go, our coach is on the board, too. No, I'll go make sure of that. Believe me, enough people saw what happened last night. It's not going to prevent Taylor from playing on the next team and getting in on a good team or drafted or however they do this monopoly to get the best players on one team.
Most of my fiercest rivalries when it came to like back in the day were like with my best friends. Like between the lines,
really?
Hated. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But you guys in the same neighborhood, you would be on the same team, wouldn't you?
No, I'm talking about like pickup games. No, not all the time. We also had a real league. Nothing like your little Fugazi league. We had real drafts.
Well, that's the other thing, is that you're supposed to have a draft for this league, but then the coaches get to, like, select.
Yeah, that's weird.
And they just they loaded up their team.
Yeah, that's odd. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Bob Nightingale has been all over the Astros offseason. He joins the Killer Bees next. ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line, being joined now by Bob Nightingale. Covers Major League Baseball better than anybody else and covers it for USA Today. Bob, thanks for taking a few minutes to hang out with the Killer Bees here in Houston. Astros have been very aggressive this offseason. They re-signed Rafael Montero, one of their own. People thought it was higher than market value. Same thing with Jose Abreu, getting that done a couple of days ago. How are the Astros being so active with no general manager here, Bob?
Well, I just think there's the strong desire from ownership on down, from Jim Crane on down, they'll keep this thing going, build a dynasty. I mean, it already is, from 2017 to now, brings you back to the Yankee days from 96 to 2001. So, yeah, they're doing everything possible to try to go back-to-back here, which hasn't been done since the 80s.
Bob, what's your opinion on the fact that, from Bagwell's comments the other day to a lot of other people's comments that letting James Click go was a travesty and shouldn't have been done, and that since then, if they're going to move away from analytics and get more Reggie Jackson and Bagwell input, that this could actually hurt the Astros in going forward. But I'm curious your opinions on what you think about how it's being run right now and how long they'll continue to do this without a general manager.
Well, I mean, you got still several, you know, assistant GMs in place there, you know, along with Bagwell helping out. So, you know, they were in place too, you know, when James Click was there. So I don't think they're getting away from the analytics. They're not, they're just saying, hey, let's don't go overboard on this. You know, we want to, we believe in the clubhouse culture. We believe in the guy's heart and stuff. I mean, how many guys look good on paper? You put him in the clubhouse and, you know, the guy just doesn't work out, or he doesn't have the heart for big moments and things like that. I think it's all what Bagwell was saying, that, hey, they're still believing in analytics like everybody else, but they're not going to go just fully on analytics.
Bob, you've been reporting this, that the Astros will meet with Wilson Contreras once the winter meetings open up. Obviously, they had a trade for Wilson Contreras at the deadline for Jose Urquidy. Crane said, no, we're not doing that right now. But they must like Contreras enough to where they're entertaining the idea of him joining the Astros this offseason. I'm curious how the Astros view Contreras. Are they signing him to be the backstop, to be the catcher, to replace Martin Maldonado? Or do they see him more as a left fielder DH?
I think more as a, you know, as a catcher DH. I'm not sure how he'd play left field. I don't see that. I know it's a small left field, but I'd much rather have Jordan Alvarez there than him. So, but yeah, maybe split the time sort of thing. Hey, they need more offense at that position. And I think the big resistance, trading for Contreras at the trade deadline was just putting a new catcher in, you know, behind the plate to work with a pitching staff he's never worked with before. That, there's a lot of risk to that. The bottom line is, you know, their pitching was their bread and butter. So why, you know, why mess with that? And any bonus as a offense, you know, was fine coming from Maldonado, but they certainly wanted Maldonado to still be, you know, that everyday guy or, you know, primary guy down the stretch in a pennant race.
Bob, how do you see the Verlander situation playing out? Rumors are it's between the Dodgers and the Astros, including his brother stating that on a podcast. But I'm curious if you think that the Astros are going to put everything on pause now after the Abreu signing to wait and see if Verlander's coming back or not. Are they going to continue to spend? And if Verlander comes back, they'll just go that much further over the tax.
Yeah, I think if Verlander comes back, it's a you know, great for them. I just don't see them going big on Verlander. If he gets a 3-year deal for, you know, like 130 like Scherzer did, I don't think they'll do that. They really don't. I think they'll let him walk. And, you know, I think Scherzer has a lot of the, I'm sorry, Verlander has a lot of appeal in L.A. and the Mets, too, if they lose to Grom. I also think, too, is that, you know, Justin Verlander, hey, you know, he fell in love with Houston, but hey, when he won two World Series there, won two Cy Youngs there. You know, sometimes guys want different challenges, and I think you know, the Dodgers or the Mets would provide more challenges. Also, you know, I think there's a greater need for both the Dodgers and the Mets to have Verlander than the Astros. I think the Astros can still win the division without him.
Yeah, Bob, I think if anybody's paying me $45 million a year, I can fall in love with that city. And it's not like L.A. and New York's exactly chopped liver. So I don't think Verlander would have any problem living in the Big Apple or out in Hollywood. What are some other names that the Astros might be kicking the tires on? They mentioned during the press conference when they introduced Jose Abreu, Crane mentioned catcher. Maybe that is Contreras. He mentioned an outfielder as well. What are some names the Astros are rumored to be having some conversations with?
Well, I think there's a lot of talk about Andrew Benintendi, you know, grabbing him from the Yankees, strong outfielder, good offensive force. I know they've kicked the tires, at least internally, on, you know, guys like, you know, Cody Bellinger, Brandon Nimmo, that sort of thing. You know, Nimmo, of course, would come at a high price tag, you know, probably over $100 million where they're, you know, obviously Bellinger would be a 1-year deal. And, you know, Benintendi would be a much smaller contract, too. So I do believe they just want, you know, would love to get an everyday, you know, outfielder, whether it's in center field or left field.
Masataka Yoshida. I'm curious about this name, Bob. Somebody that I'm very intrigued with. I don't know how his game is going to translate. I think we'd all be guessing if we were trying to figure out what he's going to look like in the bigs. I know they mentioned that he might translate better than Suzuki did last year, with the Cubs. What are you hearing on Yoshida? What kind of posting number are we looking at? What kind of contract do you think he ultimately gets?
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody needs pitching, so, you know, guys like that, too, draw fans to the gates. Not that the Uncle Dashers are going to have any trouble drawing fans. So, yeah, it'll be interesting what he gets, you know, whether it's a, you know, 5 years around $100 million type thing or what have you. Yeah, it's almost impossible to guess in the guys that come from Japan just, you know, what they'll get, where they want to, you know, come anywhere else besides, you know, out west. You know, a lot of guys would prefer staying on the West Coast just because it's easier for the travel and for their family and stuff to come and see them.
Bob, I'm curious of some of the biggest names that are out there. What are the most likely to change destinations? Judge, you mentioned DeGrom. There's some big names that could be some pretty influential names if they joined other teams. But are we going to see a lot of status quo, or could an Aaron Judge and a Jacob DeGrom find new locations?
Yeah, I think the biggest name that will change, not for sure, but most likely be Trey Turner. I think he leaves the Dodgers and goes out east. Probably goes to Philadelphia Phillies. I do think he leaves the Dodgers. I don't think DeGrom stays with the Mets either. There's just a vibe over the last 2 years. You heard a lot of talk that he wasn't crazy about New York. So I could see him leaving as well. You know, Judge, I still think he goes back to the Yankees. But I think it's like a 60-40. I mean, if the Giants are going to have to get him, they're going to have to, you know, overpay the Yankees by a good, I would think, $20 or $30 million. So, you know, Judge is going to get about an 8-year deal somewhere. You know, the Yankees have talked about between 290 and 310. Now, you know, if the Giants want to come in about 325 or higher, then they may get him.
You think it's good business, Bob, to pay somebody in their 30s north of $300 million, guarantee him 8 years, as good as Judge is?
I mean, you know, he's had injuries in the past. He didn't have injuries last year. Now, he is a draw. For the Giants' standpoint, their attendance has been dropping. I think their attendance last year was the lowest for full season since the ballpark opened. They need some thump there. I mean, his bat's perfect for the Yankee Stadium. You know, if you're an icon in New York, you switch places like Robinson Cano found out, then you're, you know, just a regular guy. It's just, you know, it's probably never good business to put out that kind of money for a position player or a pitcher for that length. But it's a cost of doing business, and, you know, it's just money. It's not like you're trading away top prospects, too. You're just giving them money.
Bob, of the remaining Astros free agents, I'm curious if you've heard anything. We're assuming Vasquez is gone and he's going to be an everyday catcher somewhere, and if so, where? And then a Yuli Gurriel. At 39 years old, is there going to be interest for him? Are the Astros have a shot to have him be their more utility guy and start, go from starter to bench guy, or is some team going to give him a chance to play first base?
Yeah, Vasquez, there's a decent amount of interest out there. I think they're just kind of waiting to see, you know, what happens to Contreras. So once Contreras decides where he goes, then I think he's that, you know, he's the next best option. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see it's almost a flip flop of catchers. You know, where the Astros get Contreras, who is with the Cubs, and then the Cubs grab Vasquez, who of course is with the Astros. I can see that. Gurriel, you know, then he's going to decide, hey, but you want to be a utility player and, you know, get some at least 300 at bats, or do you want to still be an everyday player somewhere else? So I think that one takes a while. I'd be surprised if there's any early decision of Gurriel.
You think Brantley takes a while, too? I know Crane has mentioned that they want to monitor his recovery with the shoulder. Are you hearing anything on his market?
No, I know he wants to, you know, continue playing at least another year. So, you know, that one might be a deal where he signs for a smaller base contract with a lot of incentives and, you know, performance bonuses to see if he can stay healthy. You know, that was a serious injury and everything else. And, you know, he may be a late signing as well, too, where he may have to show people sometime during the winter that he is healthy.
We always appreciate the time, Bob. Great stuff as always. You're knocking it out of the park with all this hot stove stuff. We've been reading every word. Keep up the great work and hope to chat again very soon.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
It's Bob Nightingale. Covers Major League Baseball better than anybody else, and he does it for USA Today. Justin Verlander, the dilemma that the Astros have. Apparently, Ben Verlander yesterday said on his podcast that it was either going to be the Dodgers or the Astros. What that means, and how about Bob saying the Astros won't go big on him? Is that the right way to handle it? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Bob Nightingale talking about Verlander. Apparently, Ben Verlander always knows what's up with Justin Verlander. We had him on last year, remember? We were talking about the qualifying offer. He's like, don't rule out the qualifying offer, which I thought was a bit of a surprise, but I thought it was a positive for the Astros. But Verlander apparently on his YouTube chat yesterday or the day before said it's going to be either the Dodgers or the Astros. The way that I interpreted that was that the Dodgers have given Verlander a contract that he is pleased with, he is happy with, he was willing to sign that contract, but now he's giving that contract to Houston Astro owner Jim Crane, and Crane is deciding whether or not he wants to match said contract, much like the Astros handled Verlander last year when he got the same exact offer from the Toronto Blue Jays, yet it was the Astros that signed Justin Verlander. Bob Nightingale says if the Astros do get Verlander, they won't go big on JV. I don't believe that that's a scenario that exists. I don't think there's going to be anything less than big for Justin Verlander. I believe Justin Verlander is going to sign a big contract. The question now becomes, is Jim Crane willing to match that big contract? I don't know where you stand, Blankers. I don't believe that the Astros are going to do it. They're doing what I told them to do on September 1st.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in the camp all along that if he's truly going to chase that 43-plus number with the pitching staff that's already in place, you don't need Justin Verlander. You have gotten a lot out of Justin Verlander. He's gotten a lot of the Astros. Obviously, the results speak for themselves. But at a certain point, you have to make a business decision, no matter how good of friends he and Crane are. And the business decision here is, with the starting rotation that goes as deep and as talented as you have, you don't need him. It would be one thing to take him back at the 25 that he was due to make this year. But at 43, where that money could be used elsewhere to actually enhance your everyday lineup even more, I just don't think you need Justin Verlander.
Yeah, I don't believe that you need Verlander either. But the six starting pitchers that you have that aren't Justin Verlander currently under contract, Framber Valdez, Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, Lance McCullers, Jose Urquidy, Hunter Brown. I think that that's still the best rotation in the American League, to be quite honest with you. And they still have an extra arm. Like they
it might
go
be
six
the best
rotation
in baseball, depending on where other pitchers end up.
Yeah, it could be. Like Braves are going to be really good. Yep. Dodgers will be really good. I feel confident saying American League, maybe all of baseball. And you also expect some, you know, guys to have better years. Lance McCullers, now he's always an injury concern, didn't pitch the full season last year. You expect him to have a better year. Christian Javier has emerged to be one of your top starting pitchers. He's not going to be doing this, oh, he's the sixth guy in the rotation. He might be a bullpen guy. No, you're gonna showcase him next year as one of your horses, which is where he belongs.
And Hunter Brown has the capabilities by stuff alone to be able to take the league by storm and give you an extra added bonus arm that could be dominant. And then there you go.
I want to temper my expectations on Hunter Brown.
I see that.
I don't think he's going to finish top 10 in Cy Young voting next year. Like he's going to be a rookie. I know he's got a cup of coffee last year, but he's going to be a rookie. And rookies take some time. Like he's going to show flashes where he has games where he goes seven innings, gives up one run. He's going to have other games where he goes five innings, gives up five runs. Rookies do tend to do that. Katie Burner phone. Verlander wants the 3-year, $45 million. Go get it. There's still a hitter fear when facing a true ace like him. And then he asked us who we got in a fight, a hobbit or a troll. Probably a hobbit. 713-780-ESPN. I don't know who that is. I take it it's Katie Burner phone.
Okay.
He also mentioned Wilson Contreras, Bob Nightingale did. This is what kind of interests me on the Wilson Contreras conversation. And I know people right now, I've seen a good percentage of Astro fans and Astro fans that I respect that say they don't really love the idea of Wilson Contreras, which I find to be fascinating. There is some downside to Contreras, especially if you're using him in left field, because he hasn't played a whole lot of left field like in the last 3 years. I think the last time he did it was 2018. Some of the fear that I would have, it's not fear, it's more of the negatives. He comes with a qualifying offer, so the Astros pick, would have to give up their second-round pick. They would lose some international money. Now, would that prevent me from signing Wilson Contreras? No, that would not prevent me from signing Wilson Contreras. I think the conversation here is where does he play? Because Bob Nightingale said it wouldn't be a left-field DH. Yeah. It'd be more of a catcher DH, which contradicts what Ken Rosenthal said. So, I mean, who do you trust more, Nightingale or Rosenthal? For me, it's probably Nightingale, if I'm being completely honest. Rosenthal said the Astros like Contreras in part because he can play left field, particularly at Minute Maid Park, which has the second smallest left field in the majors after Fenway Park. Most of Contreras' limited time in left was in 16, his rookie season, but in theory, he could alternate with Yordan in left and a DH while also catching on occasion. So for me, the question when it comes to Contreras isn't are you in or are you out? Because if the Astros sign Wilson Contreras, I would be very happy. He's a dude that has an OPS north of 800. He's a good Major League Baseball hitter regardless of the position he plays. I think the conversation when you talk now about Contreras shouldn't be whether you like him or not. Conversation should be how he's deployed. Mm-hmm. If you do sign him, and maybe it's a conversation to be had whenever the Astros sign him, if they do, I like him like more of the mold because I don't think the Astros are going to move on from Martin Maldonado. Dusty Baker, last time I checked, signed a one-year contract to continue to manage this team, and he puts tremendous value in Martin Maldonado's ability to handle pitching staff. Yeah, 2023.
Because it's a different conversation as we move forward into 24 when Maldonado's up, Dusty's up, but also the fact that the expectation might be one thing for this year for Contreras, but then I've also seen stories that said, hey, he might be used in multiple areas for 23. 24, uh-huh. He becomes your everyday catcher again. I don't know that they would go back to that, would they?
Well, what do you mean back to that?
Like, make him a starter at just catcher again after a year where he didn't do it very often.
Well, I tweeted this yesterday. I said that, like, because I had a plan for him back when the Astros were rumored to get him in July, which apparently was more than a rumor. Apparently it was fruition, but Crane said that he wasn't going to do it. My thought was, and I tweeted this yesterday, 2 games a week he catches as the backup to Martin Maldonado. 3 games a week he plays in left field because you had Jeff Bagwell, the GM of the Houston Astros, saying yesterday or 2 days ago that I want Yordan to play 45-50% of the games in left field. So that means somebody else has to be playing 50-55% of the games in left field. And then 2 games a week he DHs. That would be the plan for Wilson Contreras in 2023. Martin Maldonado is a free agent after next year. I don't think that the Astros are going to bring back Martin Maldonado, who's going to be in his late 30s. So I think if they sign Contreras to a 4-5 year deal, the plan at 23, in my opinion, he's going to be his primary backup, Martin Maldonado's primary backup. He's going to play 2-3 times a week in left field, will play 2-3 times a week as the designated hitter, and basically he's an everyday starter. Then in 2024, the plan would be Wilson Contreras is our starting catcher.
And that you think as a catcher, that I mean, I think a lot of times, too, your body gets conditioned, and then all of a sudden you're not doing it as frequently, and then you go back to being the everyday catcher, and then are your knees and your legs and the adjustment and as you get older as a player, too, is that a smart move? Because we're also still talking about
slippage offensively,
Corey Lee,
to your point.
And we're talking about, you know, and we're also talking about younger guys that are coming up through the system.
There's concerns there because you would expect, like, the plan in 2023 where he's only catching 2 times a week and then hitting left field DH the rest of the week, that's going to help him out offensively more than if he was starting 5 times a week behind the dish. So, yeah, offensively, you kind of preserve him in 2023. But in 2024, if you don't have a catcher, I think that that would be the plan. Yeah.
But then the grind becomes now your legs are readjusting yet again, and now there's a whole lot more wear and tear on them. Now you not only suffer offensively, but you might suffer defensively overall because you might get hurt because your legs stopped getting that everyday conditioning being behind the plate.
I don't think you can operate with like, well, I hope he doesn't get hurt. You know,
I'm not saying that. I'm saying your body can break down a lot easier if you stop doing it and then start doing it again.
There would be slippage. There's no doubt. Like if the Astros sign him and next year he's only the primary backup catcher, but he plays every day left field DH. However, he's in the lineup 6 times a week. And then all of a sudden in 2024, if he's your everyday catcher where he's starting 5 of every 7 games behind the dish, there's going to be slippage offensively for sure. He's never been a good defensive catcher. So, yeah, there are some questions when it comes to that. But as far as Nightingale saying that he thinks he'd be more catcher DH, I don't really see a scenario that exists where, if both guys stay healthy, neither guy gets hurt, where Wilson Contreras starts more games at catcher than Martin Maldonado.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I just don't see it.
Yeah, I just think, and it's twofold. He's Dusty's guy, which we know means something. But the pitching staff, he's their security blanket. You look at how many people like a Lance McCullers just wanted to throw to Maldi, even a Verlander who wanted to throw to Maldi. But Verlander changed his personal catcher. But you can tell, like even a Fromber, the way he calmed him down. There were guys that just had that extra level of trust, including all the coaching staff, that knew he was a coach on the field, that knew framing pitches. And don't underestimate how good he is, not just defensively, but framing pitches, that was an intangible in the favor of the Astros, that all of a sudden, if that goes away, there'll be concerns. But at a certain point, too, you got to wonder how much more Maldi you can take, because, as you mentioned, he's getting older. He's going to break down. He broke down, obviously, with the surgery he needed and the way that he was breaking down in the playoffs. And then he doesn't hit. And so how much you're lucky in the fact that the rest of your lineup is so stacked that you don't have to worry about it as much as other teams would. But most other teams are not going to employ a catcher that's hitting 150.
No, you're right. And that's kind of an option there, too, because, like, there's different ways to view the Astros lineup throughout the year. Like, whenever we talk offseason, we're looking at the opening day lineup. If Martin Maldonado, if you sign Contreras, and your plan is that he's only the backup catcher but left field DH full-time, and Martin Maldonado hits .120 next year, and maybe he's taken a step back defensively, the option always exists now that Wilson Contreras takes his spot as the everyday catcher. And what Jim Crane said at the press conference for Abreu, too, where, like, where else do you want help? Whenever he said catcher, that doesn't necessarily mean the starting catcher. Martin Maldonado might catch 4 out of every 7 games, and if you get Wilson Contreras' bat in the lineup 3 of 7 games behind the dish, that helps your overall production as the catcher. He didn't say starting catcher. He said more help at catcher.
That's the same way the media and everybody else jumped the gun when they went and got a catcher at the trade deadline. They thought they were getting a catcher to be a frontline catcher, and it turns out, in their mind, they were getting an insurance policy for Martin Maldonado.
Yeah. I mean, Murph says Vasquez was a catcher for the shutout Yankee Stadium no-hitter at Philly. I don't disagree with you. Like, pitchers can throw to other people not named Martin Maldonado, but Dusty Baker's going to value Martin Maldonado. Both things can be true. Let me ask, do you think if Bagwell's interested in GM, what about manager? I don't think Bagwell's interested in either job. I don't think Bagwell's interested in anything that's going to require him to come to work every single day. He's already proven it once as the hitting coach. I think he loves his life being the kind of part-time owner or owner's best friend that's the boss. I'm calling Bagwell the boss, but can still go golf every day and eat at the best restaurants in Houston every day. He doesn't want to work that hard, and I don't blame him. I wouldn't want to work that hard either.
No, when you've gotten all the things, look, that's the same reason why Peyton Manning doesn't want to be a head coach or work every day in the NFL. And he basically turned down a boatload of money to be a broadcaster, too. When you have worked so hard at your craft to make the amount of money over your career, you don't want to work anymore when you're done playing. You just want to enjoy life and pick and choose challenges. This is a challenge for the short term that intrigues Jeff Bagwell, just like you mentioned with the hitting coach and so many other things like broadcasting. He doesn't want to do it every day, and at a certain point, the gloss is going to wear off, and he's going to be like, I'll leave this in the capable hands of somebody else.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Speaking of Bagwell's BFF owner, Jim Crane, you can look at the offseason with the Astros ownership. He isn't looking for value. He's looking for the best. I'll tell you what I mean. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.